I'm not a practitioner. I'm more or less an academic. And worse than that, I'm an economist, which is the dismal science, as you might know. So I don't have any funny pictures, and I don't have any cute kids. Mercifully, my presentation is quite short. But as Allison was talking about, there is a need to find the savings in the system. And what we've done here in this, the research that we've done, is try to look for where those savings might be and to quantify them. So I might be less entertaining than Larry was. But I think that there's food for thought in this presentation. And I'd first like to acknowledge my Urban Institute colleagues, Brenda Spillman and Tim Wademan, and my colleagues at the California Public Employees Retirement System, CalPERS, and the California Comptroller's Office, and especially Ruth Holton Hodson, who had the idea for the second study that I'm going to present here. And funding was provided by the wonderful California Endowment and Trust for America's Health. And our focus in our research here was on the community-based primary prevention, but this model could be applied to any sort of prevention or even to preventive services. And the assumption of the community allows us to think of these as expenditures to be assessed on a per capita basis rather than targeting individuals. So before I start, one important caveat is that in this work we look only at the savings that are associated with medical care. So we don't consider savings that are associated with, for example, improved productivity or reduced absenteeism from school or work. That's not it, huh? Which one? Thank you. So we did two studies, and they have similar research questions. And the first research question here led us to focus on a set of conditions that are all amenable to the same types of interventions. We then estimated what was being spent on those conditions, and then we estimated what savings might be achieved if we reduced the prevalence of these conditions. And finally, we considered who might be logically reap the savings from looking of prevention of these conditions by looking at who's currently paying the cost. We started with looking at the 15 most expensive conditions in the United States, and we selected a subset of these that are amenable to changes in diet and exercise in the short and medium run. And as you all know, there are other conditions that are amenable to diet and exercise. There's some cancers, some mental disorders, such as particularly depression, and some types of arthritis that would be affected by diet and exercise. But these are in a longer time frame, so I'm not looking at those here. This is how we sort of think of our disease clusters. We group the selected conditions into the short and medium run conditions. And in the short run, we look at diabetes and high blood pressure, either alone or together. And in the medium run, we look at the complications of diabetes and hypertension. But we also, these are heart disease, stroke, and renal disease. We also look at heart disease, stroke, and renal disease not connected with diabetes and hypertension, but also related to the same metabolic precursors as diabetes and hypertension. We have two models with two very different data sources, just a couple of really, really dismal slides here. The first model was estimated from a sample of national expenditures called the MEPS, and the other was calculated from actual claims on a defined population in California. This is the CalPERS data set. The first data set includes all non-institutionalized adults. The second includes only the non-retiree population. So this is a population that's much younger, and it explains a lot of the differences between them. The CalPERS study is based on claims from 2004 to 2008, and the results we are expressed in 2008 dollars. The results from the MEP study, which is based on 2003 to 2005, are also expressed in 2008 dollars, adjusted for medical care inflation and for the known underreporting in the MEPs. We used regression analysis to predict the expenditures by the disease clusters that I mentioned. We then calculated something that we call excess medical expenditures. And that's the difference between what is being spent on a person who has one of these conditions and what's being spent on a person who has none of those conditions. So if it costs more to treat a broken arm in a diabetic, we don't count the cost of treating the broken arm. We take the cost of the excess in treating a diabetic with a broken arm or any other condition. And we like to think of these excess expenditures as the target for prevention. Okay, if you missed it the first time, here's the caveat again. And research suggests that if you include these sorts of savings in estimates, that you're going to increase the savings by a third to a half again. We applied the first model, and we got national and state-level estimates by the usual sets of payers. We applied the second model, and we got statewide estimates in California, and we also looked at demographic characteristics and employment groups and county. These are our results for excess medical expenditures from that first model. And the bottom line is that excess medical spending on these conditions is about one-third of total medical expenditures. In the short run, it's $180 billion and $208, which is about 12% of all medical expenditures. And this, in the short run, these conditions can be targeted by the types of programs that we know, the diabetes prevention programs that's been that model that's been so successfully implemented across the country by the Y. In the median run, the costs nearly double to $314 billion a year, or more than a fifth of medical care expenditures. And we think of the median run as 5 to 10 years, although it's really not clear how long it might be. And the results from the follow-on study of the diabetes prevention program, 10-year results, suggest that the majority of the gains that they've achieved can be sustained over this time frame. And it's worth noting here that we only looked at the reductions in medical care expenditures from a reduction in prevalence. So we didn't look at what the effects would be of a reduction in the severity of illness, which would also certainly occur. So who is bearing this cost? In the short run, about three-quarters of it is borne by private payers and out-of-pocket. But in the medium run, the private payers still bear about half of the cost, but much of the burden shifts to Medicare, which we all pay for. And this is because the prevalence of the conditions that we're talking about increases with age. And with the aging of the population, this is only going to become more important. So if you take the results of the diabetes prevention program, which found about a 58% reduction in the conversion of pre-diabetes to diabetes, and apply this to the general population. Given the prevalence of prediabetes in the population, the DPP results suggest that a similar program, if you did it nationwide, could expect to achieve about a 15% reduction in the rate of diabetes prevalence. So think of this as possible. For each 1% reduction in prevalence annually, the national savings would be $1.8 billion from preventing those short-term uncomplicated diseases. And in the long run, it would be about $5 billion a year, every year. The largest states have the greatest potential for reaping these savings in terms of dollars, but the greatest potential percentage change in savings comes in those states that have the highest disease burden. So here are the results from the second study, and remember, this is a much younger population. But we're still looking at the same conditions. And the excess annual medical care expenditures in the short run are $1,600 per person, range from about $1,600 to about $4,000 per person per year. And in the medium run, they range from about $11,000 to about $24,000 a year. And the distribution of these expenditures across race and ethnicity shows the potential that primary prevention has for reducing health disparities across these groups. And the numbers of interest here are the share attributable to preventable diseases. Can you read that? On average, sorry about talking about averages, it's about 8.9%. But it's only 7.2% among non-Hispanic whites, which is the largest group in the CalPERS population. 11.7% among Hispanics, the second largest group, and 11.1% among African Americans, the third largest group. So in the median run, there are increases in all of these groups. But among non-Hispanic whites, the share more than doubles. While among Hispanics and African Americans, it's only up by about two-thirds. And the result is that the share of preventable diseases in these populations is just about equal in the median run. However, the increases among the other groups are much larger. This is the distribution of the shares of expenditures across the different counties in California. And those of you who know more about what these counties are like will understand this map better than I do. But I think the interesting thing is that in light of these findings, the state of California has just announced it is going to invest in prevention. And these programs are going to be, it's going to be invest in prevention. They're going to do this in partnership with the Kaiser Permanente and the Service Employees International Union, SEIU. And the state is going to shortly begin workplace wellness initiatives in two of its agencies. And these programs will be administered by Kaiser. And of course, it's hoping to see improvements in health and in worker productivity, but it's also hoping to see reductions in its medical care costs. And this is the part that I think is really interesting. If it sees those savings in medical care costs, they're going to share them between the state and the union. So in summary, community-based interventions can reduce or delay chronic disease affecting morbidity, disability, and costs. A 5% prevalence and reduction in these conditions could save $9 billion nationally every year in the short run, which would cover an investment of about $29 per person. And other studies suggest that a reduction of this magnitude is entirely possible and could be sustained. And in the medium run, these savings would increase threefold. And the timing of this is uncertain because we're not really sure how long the medium run is, but say 5 years, worth doing. And the distribution of the savings suggests that community-level preventions could be instrumental in reducing healthcare disparities. I want to leave you with some questions to ponder, which is, given how much preventable disease is costing us, how much should we be spending on prevention? And why haven't we made this investment yet? And given where the potential savings are seen across payers and across different ethnic groups and across different counties, who should bear the cost of this investment? And finally, why does the question of cost versus savings arise for spending on prevention and not for spending on curative care? I hope you'd like to know more about the studies in more detail than this brief overview. They're downloadable.